What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Justin Gibbony. So Justin is an attorney and political strategist. He is also the co-founder of the AND campaign and has just released a book called Compassion and Conviction. And so in this episode, we talk about something I haven't really talked about a lot on this show, which is politics. And I think this book, Compassion and Conviction, the AND campaign, is a really important organization that you need to know about. It. They talk about having healthy political discussions. Can you believe it? I mean, it's just incredible. And they talk about ways in which to empower Christians to have these conversations in healthy ways, led by scriptural principles. I mean, I think these are the things that we need to be talking about. And so you see this passion come through throughout Justin's story of like how he sort of like got into politics and started, you know, becoming a strategist. And I just encourage you to check out all these resources. It's a great interview. Justin has some just incredible thoughts that I think will really challenge you to the next level in what it means to work for the common good as a Christian. And so can't wait for you to hear from him. Just a quick reminder to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle. And you can also find me on Twitter at Curry Blanford. Just to stay up to date with the podcast and what we got going on, you can also slide to the bottom of your iPhone, in your iTunes app, and leave a rating and review, which helps get the word out about the podcast. I'd greatly appreciate that. Yeah, go ahead and do all that for me, and I hope you enjoy hearing from Justin. All right, well, Justin, I can't say thanks enough for coming on the podcast. It's nice to meet you and chat a little bit.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For sure. So let's just jump off and maybe have you just introduce yourself to everybody a little bit.
Yeah, no problem. I'm Justin Gibbony. I'm an attorney and political strategist in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm also the co-founder of the AND campaign, which is a Christian civic organization that is trying to bring the compassion and conviction of Jesus Christ into the civic arena. I have my wife's name, Summer. I have three sons and really just have a passion for the intersection between faith and politics.
Yeah, that's good. I've really enjoyed watching a lot of the AND campaign stuff and reading the book. Very enlightening. I'm sort of a newbie in some of this world, so I'm excited to get into some of that with you. Can we just, though, back up and maybe walk through your story? Because I know you're a lawyer. Can you talk about like what led to all of that, like the why behind some of that?
Behind being a lawyer?
Yeah, well, just like the journey that you've taken, like how did all that go down, I guess?
Yeah, you know, growing up, you know, my dad had always told me that he wanted to be an attorney. And I guess I just kind of took on his dream. I never really questioned it and just was always kind of determined to go to law school and be an attorney. As far as being a political strategist, when I graduated from law school, I came down to Atlanta, was working at a firm. And I would just always, I had a group of friends who we'd always come together and talk about politics all the time. And one day I was just like, hey, man, we shouldn't be so academic about this. Why don't we actually just get into politics? I mean, we got a big mayor's race coming up. We should try to get into it. So we did a whole bunch of research, found the candidate that we thought was best and really just knocked on the campaign door and said, how can we help? And that was really the beginning of, for me, kind of running campaigns, doing political strategy. And I really always like political biographies, stuff like that. Always had an appreciation for kind of how power worked and all that stuff. And so for better or worse, but that's kind of what got me into politics. And then also, I think the other thing was, so I played football in college for Vanderbilt University. And after I stopped playing, I think I was looking for that same kind of competitive spirit.
Yeah.
And so politics gave me that. That's not why I'm in it today, but I think initially that's why. One of the reasons I got into it.
I get that. What did you play? What position were you?
Safety.
Safety. Oh, really? Oh, nice. I played a little high school football in Texas. That was like when I really peaked right there.
Okay.
Life, you know? So, but it is, I mean, I still miss playing football. Like there's just something about like, that spirit, that competitiveness that, that just gets under your skin a little bit. I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that. So, I guess, okay, so, you know, I've been through Bible college. I've been through sort of some higher education in Bible and all that stuff. And as I was reading your book, I just was thinking about how little discipleship I've had in my life of being a Christian around politics. Have you found that to be true as you've sort of gone down this road?
Yeah, that's why we wrote the book. I mean, a lot of people simply had no theology to apply to the political arena. A lot of people either stay away from it because they think it's dirty and ugly and all that stuff. And to a certain extent, they're right. But then a lot of people get into it. And once they step out of the church doors, they just become something, you know, they may say the religion has something to do with it, but a lot of times it's just ideology and partisanship. And so, yeah, we wrote this because, you know, I was having a conversation with a pastor here and he was like, he literally, after 2016, he literally had people fighting in his congregation over politics. And so, yeah, we just need a better education on what the Bible says about, you know, about kind of power and politics and how it applies. And that's really why we wrote Compassion and Conviction. So Christians, for those who don't feel like they know nothing about politics, it works on a lot of levels for those don't know a lot about it. But then also to those who have been involved, but feel like I'm not doing this the right way. There has to be a better way.
Right.
I think it works for all of them.
Yeah, because I'm going to be honest, like I am naturally non-confrontational, right? It's like I'm a people pleaser. It's much easier to stay on that side of things for me. You know what I mean? So to like jump it, I don't know that I've ever had a political discussion with somebody where I came out and I was like, you know what? We really like did that well. You know what I mean? Like we knocked that out of the park. But so why for somebody like me who is you know, just naturally predisposed to not be into that sort of thing, why jump into the political arena in general?
It's a good question. I think generally because politics has such an impact on everything around us. I mean, politics touches every aspect of life, from when we can go to church as we see now, right?
Yeah, right.
To what our children eat, what they learn in school, all that stuff. And so the AND campaign really sees politics as a robust opportunity to love our neighbors. Because it touches so many different things, it gives us a great opportunity to do that. And when we look at politics that way, instead of looking at, you know, we look at it as a tool for us to kind of defend human dignity and promote human flourishing, then I think it changes how we go about it. Because I think for too long, Christians, kind of the ones who were Christian in politics, were mostly focused on defending themselves, right? And what I call the politics of Christian self-interest.
For sure. Well, I mean, like, just even the culture wars that are fought, like, day in and day out, you know, by Christians over, you know, political issues. I mean, it just, like, gets so sketchy so fast, I feel like, right?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, there's just a lot of polarization. And I think one of the reasons for that is people have attached their political affiliation to their identity. We've allowed our political affiliations in some instances to become religious in nature. And so when something is that close to you, you're going to be willing to fight for it. And I just think that's the wrong way to go about politics. And that isn't to take, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't serious issues and all that. But yeah. I think we don't do ourselves or the people that we're advocating for any favors when we go about it that way.
Yeah. Well, because in the book, I think you have a really good treatment of progressives versus sort of conservatives and like these two sort of like, you know, juxtaposed positions in general and how sort of the major outliers of both positions sort of take on the like character, of, like define the whole position in general, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you have two relatively small groups, right? You have what in Hidden Tribes, I would there's a study called Hidden Tribes that just kind of describes the American political landscape. But it says, you know, you have basically two groups on the extreme. It's the progressive advocates, I think they called them, and the devoted conservatives. One group is like 8%. The other group is 6%. The two things that they have in common is they are affluent. I mean, they have a lot of money and they're majority white. But they control those two small groups. Control the pretty much the entire discourse, political discourse.
Right.
And the rest of us just kind of, because we don't have the time or because, you know, we're not interested or whatever it is, you know, we just kind of follow behind them and they set the rules.
Yeah. Well, time's an interesting aspect to that. I mean, one thing wealth does get you is time, right? You can sort of farm out the things that like average people have to do every day because you have the money in which to do that, right? I mean, I never really thought about that aspect, I guess, of the, because I mean, we're as a country, we're sort of ruled in general by the wealthy, right? I mean, most people in politics are, you know, I guess not not an average income.
Yeah, no, there's something to that. I think on an aspirational note, though, the problem is numbers can combat that, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is that we just go along with them. We retweet them. We use their terminology. We use their rhetoric. And so we really, when we get into politics, it's either you're going to join those devoted conservatives or you're going to join those progressive advocates. And that's just what we do instead of, especially that's really bad for Christians because we really need to have a distinct witness. And once we jump on one of those bandwagons, we are losing so much of our witness, losing so much of what we have to offer society.
Yeah. So how did you yourself go about like learning about how to have discourse in like a Christian way? Like what sort of brought you along in that?
Yeah, believe it or not, I wasn't always great at it. I often say, you know, I was one of the first trolls before people even knew what trolls were. Before even, I don't even know if Twitter was out yet. Because we used to for campaigns, we used to get on like message boards and just harass people and put false narratives up. It's something I really, you know, regret. And sure. I talk about it often. So I'm not an example of somebody who's always gotten it perfect. But I think in the Bible, the Bible is, you know, one place I said, well, I'm not supposed to be trading insult for insult, and I'm not supposed to be sowing discord and all that stuff. So that's one place, but a lot of reading and just really focusing on the impact that I was having on, you know, those around me. And was I really helping the people that I thought I was helping? One thing I always tell activists is you got to understand you're the face of the people that you're advocating for. Mm. And so many times our activists and advocates are the worst representation of the people who they're actually advocating for, because we would like the people we're advocating, you know, that we may even be going against, but their advocates, the face that they put on is something that a lot of people just don't want to be around. And so we all have to be, I think we all have to be aware of that.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I think a helpful way to think about things, right? Because you even mentioned Martin Luther King Jr. and how he sort of, as he was doing like sit-ins and stuff, like talk to people about how they ought to act in those situations, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad you brought that up because that was a big influence for me. I think the civil rights movement in general, you know, because you have Martin Luther King, but even in the, you know, somebody who I think is almost a better representative based on her life is Fannie Lou Hamer. Where she wasn't in a class where she was kind of protected from all that stuff. She was right in the middle of it, you know, in Ruleville, Mississippi. And even after getting beaten, right, even after being treated just terribly for no reason, she still was civil. She still was powerful, though, right? So people feel kind of act like if you're civil, then you're losing some of your power. If your argument is nuanced, you're losing some of your power. There was no more powerful speaker than Fannie Lou Hamer. There was no more one more powerful in the community, you know, in her community than her. But that had nothing to do with her being, you know, civil towards people and loving her enemy.
Do you mind just sort of like recounting the story of Fannie Lou Hamer? Because I would imagine that there's a lot of people that aren't too familiar actually with her.
Yeah.
Including myself.
Yeah. I mean, so she, you know, she grew up in a family of sharecroppers, basically, in Ruleville, Mississippi. Didn't have a whole lot of education. I think she ended up going to a SNCC meeting. I want to say it was SNCC, and just they started talking about voting. And so she started participating in this thing where they were basically trying to demystify the right to vote to Southern blacks. Because when you hadn't been able to vote for so long, even when you had the right, it just didn't seem like it was real. Hmm. Right. So that's something they had to fight against, because it was like people, they might have heard they could vote, but they're like, man, there's no way they're going to let me really have a voice. And so they were trying to let them know, like, no, you actually can have a role in this. And so in one instance where they were going around the South and doing that, they were traveling back home. They got pulled over for no reason, pulled out the car. And basically she got taken to the station and beat just for having the audacity to register people to vote and to get them to think about voting. So they beat her. I mean, like, she couldn't walk. I mean, she felt like she was going to die. And the worst part about it, what they did actually was they took her to the cell. They gave one of the other black inmates something to beat it. So they made him do it. And so it's just a real sad situation. But when asked about how she felt about it, she was just like, look, America's sick. She was like, the police officer who beat me is sick. And I can't hate him, but we need to be the doctor. And so for me, if she can do that with all that she went through throughout all her life and she could have that kind of spirit, that's just, you know, that's how Christ should work in your life. And so for me, it's not a question of what I should do, just something that you have to do, because I think that's what the Lord calls on us to do. And I think our witness, the witness that that sends, is even more important than, you know, some of the accomplishments.
Yeah, amen. Reminds me of the Charleston shooting and the prayer at the Bible study, and just the forgiveness that was offered, you know, pretty early on in there. And there was people sort of pushing back and critiquing it. And I feel like, man, that's the Holy Spirit. Like, you can't, there's no human like strength that can do that, right? It's the Holy Spirit, like, that can cause somebody to forgive in that sort of way. So it's pretty amazing, man. And just for, like, to vote, like, I mean, not like she was trying to overthrow the government or something. She's trying to vote and get other people out there to vote. It's just like, it's pretty mind-boggling. So how do you talk to people then about going about helpful public discourse about politics?
I think we just have to see, like we say, we need a whole new paradigm when it comes to this. We have to see it as almost like we see discipleship, where we're going about our Father's business. Whether you're in politics, whether you're in business or anything else, whatever you do is a reflection on the body. And so when we go into it with that mindset, you say, well, let me take this a little differently. The other thing that we make sure people get is we completely understand that the stakes are high, especially as a time in a time like this when it comes to politics. And that's what makes everybody kind of get some riled up too. So I grant that. I think that's real. But even when the stakes are high, because this ain't the first time that the stakes have been high, right? We have to maintain a certain level of hopefulness. We have to maintain a certain level of, you know, we just have to maintain that love that we say, you know, that we have for our neighbors. One of the ways that we put it is that for Christians, the witness is always more important than the win, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a strategist. I don't go in any situation not to win. But when in conflict with our witness, which one are we going to choose? And we say you have to choose the witness, that sometimes Christians have to be willing to take an L on the political side of things to make sure that our witness is sending the right message. And that can be very hard. But I think even in recent history, we've seen where Christians haven't been willing to lose, and it's really hurt our witness.
Well, because everything in us says, like, I don't know. It feels like, I think a lot of people feel like we're losing ground, like in the culture in general, or like, you know, we got to keep our, I don't know, power, even though I think probably people wouldn't say that necessarily, but that's what the rhetoric comes out, especially from Christians, you know, like we can't lose our ground and stuff. And to like ask people to take a loss is, I think asking somebody to step into the gospel, right? To like step into taking up your cross, right? It's a tough ask, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's something that we see. I mean, you can't go through the gospel without seeing a group of people who were willing to take a loss.
Yeah. Right. Well, and when they weren't willing to take a loss, they ended up doing something stupid like Peter, you know, getting after it with a sword or whatever, right? Yep. Like just missed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I did appreciate, like, throughout the book, I loved your political, strategies, like how you talked about even going into, you know, discussions and like how to think through some of that stuff. And, I mean, one of the biggest things we can do for getting into these discussions is education, right?
Oh yeah. We, you know, Christians should never, again, we're doing our Father's business, right? Yeah. So Christians should never go into a situation unprepared. Unaware of what they're getting into. And something that really made me think about that was Paul in Acts 17 and just how he went into the Agora in Athens. And you could tell, it didn't say he prepared, but you can tell how he was interacting that he was prepared. Right. So yeah, the AND campaign and me, even before the AND campaign started, always wanted Christians to be prepared, to know what they were getting into, to be strategic, to know what tactics we were going to use. And we've had some success in doing that because for whatever reason, people don't always expect Christians to be prepared, especially when it comes to civic conversations. I think sometimes they expect us just to throw Bibles at people's heads and think that's going to be enough. But right. I've been able to show some folks around me that if you are prepared, you can break, you can cut through a lot of this rhetoric and propaganda. A lot of that stuff is not even that sound. But you got to think through it. You got to sit down and think through how to cut through it.
Yeah. Well, because there's a way of, I mean, there's a way that some Christians have approached this where it is like throwing Bible verses out, right? And in your book, you talk about ways in which we can like utilize the Bible and the ethics that come from the Bible in order to have a public discourse around public topics that aren't like a theocracy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The root of it is all biblical. So we're not in any way saying for people to step away from the Bible and do something that's, you know, outside of the Bible. No, no, no. That's the basis of why you're doing it. That's the root of why you're doing it. But you've got to be able to apply it. You've got to be able to use it in a way, which tells me you know it better. Because once you really know it, then you can apply it and you can use it in ways that people can understand, right? But if you go into a situation where you're quoting Bible verses that nobody knows or that don't really apply to the conversation that's going on at the moment,
right,
I think you lose a lot of credibility. So it takes more time to be able to apply it to the situation, to the audience, and so on.
Yeah, that's good. I really appreciate what the AND campaign is doing. Do you mind just giving a little background on what that even is and like how that started and what y'all got going?
Yeah. So the AND campaign is a Christian civic organization. And it really started. So I'm the co-founder. The other two co-founders are Show Baraka, who is a Christian artist.
Love Show, man.
Yeah. Angel Maldonado, who's a pastor here in Atlanta. And once we got together, really, we came together because it was like, look, Christians are not doing this politics thing right. Something is wrong. We've got to fix it. And we were trying to put our finger on exactly what the issue was. And it became clear to us that Christians were entering into civics and they were presented with a false dichotomy. Hmm. They were presented with either if I care about justice, I have to go all the way to the left. Or if I care about moral order and morality, I got to go all the way to the right. And as we were thinking about this, and I don't even remember how it happened. Again, it's just the Holy Spirit moving. Run into reading through Ephesians 4:15, where Paul tells the church of Ephesus that basically regardless of what's going on, you have to be able to speak the truth in love.
Yeah.
And that was like, whoa, right? Because that doesn't just apply to our interpersonal relationships. That applies to our public witness. Am I able to speak the truth in love? So it wasn't just truth by itself. Right. It wasn't just love by itself. It was the truth in love. It was love and truth coming together. And it made it very clear to us that, oh, that's the gospel is love and truth. And so that's really where the AND campaign came from. Love and truth, compassion and conviction, justice and moral order. Right. And so we were saying, no, that's it. We're making a false choice. We're being faced with this false dilemma and then making this false choice because they're splitting the gospel. And so we have to come in and not say you can't be a Republican or you can't be a Democrat, but say you got to be a Christian first and you got to frame the issues, not from this false dichotomy, but frame the issues from this compassion and conviction standpoint. So we talk about in the book how to run your decisions and opinions through that kind of biblical scrutiny of compassion and conviction. What do my convictions say? That's the doctrine side of it, right? But what does compassion say, right? How can I be compassionate towards someone even when I disagree with them? And that was one of the biggest things I think AND campaign has helped people do. It's helped Christians frame the issues for themselves. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, if you're faced with if a question is framed wrong, then there actually can be two wrong answers, right? Mm. And so you're going to lose one way or the other. But if we frame it for ourselves, then the conversation changes. So I think whether you're talking about abortion, poverty, all these things, we've got to reframe those things through a biblical worldview.
Yeah. Amen. And very much so. I think, there's this way we think about Christianity as like a totality. I think Christianity so easily becomes sort of just the spiritual life, and it's sort of relegated into this one like area of sort of prayer and my personal relationship with Jesus, as opposed to how we as God's people in his kingdom affect this world for the good that he's trying to bring about, right? It's a different way of thinking about everything. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, we're very clear and we say it in the book. Look, our number one thing is to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, you know, period. That takes nothing away from the fact that God expects us to do justice. And over in the Bible, it talks about this expectation and the standard for justice. And how could we say that we are the children of the arbiter of justice and not do his will and not serve that purpose? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. So what are some of the methodologies that y'all have going in order to sort of like disciple people in this sort of vein?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with an open conversation. I think too often when we go into political conversations and conversations about race, we're just going to win, right? We're just going in there to say, look, I'm faultless. I'm going to leave this conversation faultless, right, and I need to make sure that my side wins. And that's just not how anybody who came in with that attitude towards Jesus didn't work. It didn't work too well. So one of the first things that we do, and we don't reach or anything, but I think one of the first things that we do is find common ground, right? So I go between politically progressive spaces to politically conservative spaces. And the first thing I'll do is I'll find common ground. Like, look, you're right about this, but I need to challenge you about something else. And one of the exercises that we ask people to do is just list the places where your political persuasion or, you know, your ideology gets things wrong. And if you can't list 6 to 10 things, then you really need to go back and read the Bible and, you know, and focus in on what's going on, because both sides get a lot of things wrong. That's not to say that they're equal at any given time. That's not, you know, that's not what we're saying, but there's plenty to critique. And if you can't find those areas to critique, or you can't accept a critique from somebody else without deflecting and saying, well, what about this or what about that? No, just listen and say, yeah, we need to do better at that. And I'm actually going to fight to make sure we do better at that. That's what we're looking for. I mean, we're looking for a conversation. We're looking to be biblical. So everything we do, you know, for the AND campaign is mostly focused on biblical Christians, because outside of the Bible, there's common ground, but it's not the same as when I come to you and say, no, look, the Bible says this. Now, if you're committed to the Bible, we've got to, you know, reconcile that. And that's really been the way that we go about it.
Yeah. So you mean we're supposed to talk and listen in order to have a conversation?
Yeah, that usually works best.
It's just not how we like to do it a lot of times, you know, just talk and then talk louder and then, you know, talk louder. Yeah. So, and it feels like even the church itself is so, like, we talk about the church is divided on a lot of counts, right? The church is the most segregated, you know, time of the week is Sunday morning, right? We're segregated around these, you know, racial issues, but we're also segregated on political lines and kind of take it to one another around these policies. And it just causes division more and more, I think.
Yeah, it does cause division, but I think that's kind of the beauty of where Christians are today. And I don't think it's by accident. There's a critical mass of Christians that are conservatives. There's a critical mass of biblical Christians that are progressive, which presents an opportunity for us to actually shake up everything that's going on today and to find common ground. If I don't know how we would expect the world to find common ground if Christians who have the same great commission and, you know, and the same great commandment, we've got to be able to find common ground, but we also have to understand that there's people in politics that don't want us necessarily to find common ground. They want, you know, you and me to talk through mediaries. They want us to talk through MSNBC and Fox News rather than having a conversation and saying, hey, we do agree on some stuff. Where can we work together? And so as long as we go with the narratives that we're given by society, then we're going to be in bad shape. We've got to question. We've got to run all that stuff through biblical scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, you even bring up John 17, right? He's praying. One of the few interactions you see of Jesus actually praying to the Father. And the one prayer is that they may be one as we are one. You know what I mean? Like, that is mind-boggling and feels almost insurmountable, I guess. You know what I mean?
It can. I mean, but I think it's very achievable, and here's why. Christians are supposed to have a level of courage. And right now the problem is we see courage as how loud can I scream at the other side?
Sure, right.
Right? When the other side really, a lot of times they're not even listening, or they're just listening to counter it. There's no real dialogue there.
Right.
But in the truth of the matter is sometimes the courage is turning around to your side and saying, hey, man, we're doing this wrong. Hmm. Right. Sometimes that's a lot harder to do because you don't have the incentive. Right. You don't get the pat on the back. You might get canceled. you know, people just don't like to hear that. And so we're trying to get people to see that differently. Like, yeah, I can scream at, you know, political conservatives all day, but at some point I also have to talk to my side when they get it wrong or when we use false narratives. Because if I just go along with the false narrative, that's just meaning we're losing credibility, and it doesn't help anybody. So, yeah, we are Christians. We're not necessarily taking a political side to stay there. Like, I talk a lot about how, you know, party loyalty, I don't know how beneficial that is. What does it mean exactly? Does it mean that if my party does something wrong or has a bad policy that I'm going to support it? Does it mean if one of our politicians has bad behavior, I'm going to support it? What does that mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we just have to think about it differently, because our loyalty is to one thing only.
Yeah, because, I mean, you are so hard, at least in my conversations, I'll put this in my context. I'm so hard pressed to ever hear somebody critique anything about the party that they're loyal to, right? It's only good. It's only, you know, but like, even like mentioning that there's some sort of like flaw there, like feels like it's going to topple the whole thing or something.
Yeah. I mean, look, some of this stuff becomes idols, right? Some of this stuff we connect so closely to us and to our hearts that once that falls down, it's like we're falling down. And that's how we should know that we've gone too far.
Yeah,
we have to always be far enough and have enough distance between us and our ideology and our trial and our party to be able to critique it. If not, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's good stuff. I think that's important. And I appreciate the hope that you're bringing to that conversation, because it can feel hopeless sometimes, you know. Sure. But I think we have to have hope. What else is there? You know what I'm saying? But how much? So I have this sneaking suspicion that a lot of these issues stem from a lack of, I'll just be honest. I think pastors probably just don't talk about these things enough, and have let media disciple their people instead of discipling them themselves. Would you agree with some of that statement?
There's something to that. I mean, I think sometimes a lot of pastors aren't equipped, right? So, and yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Some do kind of bring political propaganda or partisan right. propaganda right. into the pulpit, and that's unfortunate. But a lot just don't know how to approach it. They know yeah. if they seem like they're going too far left, they'll get pushback, or they seem like they're going too far right, they get pushback, and so they just kind of stay out of it because maybe they don't have the language, right? Yeah. They don't have other resources to prepare them. And that's really what the AND campaign is for. We see ourselves as a resource for pastors. So if there's pastors out there that don't know exactly how to talk about politics, compassion and conviction is going to be great for you because it gives you the language. But again, it gives you the framework, and it's a biblical right. framework. So there's nothing in there that we don't back up with Bible, because that's really where this framework comes from. And I think that's one of the reasons that the AND campaign has been able to grow is because we didn't create this out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
We really just articulated something that a lot of Christians had been thinking for a while, but just hadn't been able to say it. And so I think this book is for those pastors. And I do have grace on pastors. People expect a lot from them.
Yeah.
And they don't know everything. They're not equipped to do everything. But I do think they have to have the courage to try or to bring people in who can talk about it in a biblical way, because you can't just bring everybody into your church or into your pulpit. But it's worth seeking out people that'll do it right.
No, I think you're right about that. I found that to be true in with the book as I read through it, just like very empowering, and just showing the necessity for some of those conversations, because it's not easy, and you do feel like somebody's going to be mad no matter what you say, right? Like, just stepping in it. And pastors get enough emails each week for all the other stuff that they're not doing, much less making everybody mad over politics or whatever. But
to your point, they got to try. I mean, it's important. It's misleading. You know, people are being misled because of what's going on out there in politics. So even if you can't do it, to try and to bring in somebody or to bring in a message or books, you know, stuff like that, you know, compassion and conviction, you've seen, has exercises and questions at the end of each chapter, makes it very good for Bible studies. Let it help you. I mean, it's here to be a resource.
Yeah. And your exercises are like, hey, here's a topic. Let's discuss this. And what are the like biblical merits of all of that stuff? And I think it's a really easy way to sort of bring up those conversations that can be, you know, difficult.
Yeah.
So that's good stuff, man. I appreciate what y'all got going on and all that stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, I think sometimes I struggle because there's such a learning curve to all of this stuff. Like even the history behind all of this, you know, how the politics sort of like developed, and people bring up stuff on Twitter and I'm like, I've never even heard of that, but it's like the main argument, you know. So how does one go about being educated and at the same time having any sort of life whatsoever and like actually seeing their children, you know?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I think that the answer to that is institutions. The fact of the matter is your average Christian who goes to work every day, has a family, does not have time to read over every policy, to know every politician, right, to know everything that's going on. So that's why you try to act through institutions, right? Because say something like the AND campaign, if you want to get involved, you want to make a difference when it comes to racism or some other political issue, when you do it through an institution, those people, they have people within them that have the time to look up all that stuff, whose job it is, right, to keep up on the policy. And when you have a 2 weeks where you haven't had a chance to do anything but work, those people, right, are still grinding it out. Because when we talk about change and when we talk about doing things differently, you really do have to have commitment and endurance. And commitment and endurance are two of several things that are cultivated in institutions. But today we kind of have this, and it's a whole nother conversation, but today we really have an aversion to institutions. And I think that's unfortunate. If we want to be effective, if we want to have an impact, you do that through institutions because you don't have the time. And it's helpful to have institutions that you can trust, because you might have missed a week or two of what's going on in politics. Okay, listen to 30 minutes of, you know, the Church Politics podcast where me and Michael Ware break it down. That's the kind of things that I think institutions help you do, but institutions need you to support them too. And so that's what I would advise Christians who realistically just don't have time to keep up with it all themselves.
Yeah. I didn't know y'all had a podcast. I haven't seen this yet. What's up with that?
Yeah. So it's me and Michael Ware, who is the chief strategist for the AND campaign. It's called Church Politics. And so we do it every week, every other week, where we take, you know, three of the most pressing issues of that week, and we bring it through Bible scrutiny, man. We try to analyze it from a biblical worldview.
That's awesome. I love it. I've been listening to some Hood Politics with Propaganda. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's always helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's good stuff. Cool. That's awesome. I appreciate that. So, so you are a lawyer, right? By training, went through law school. How has being a lawyer changed from when you graduated law school to like sort of where you sit now on sort of this vocational trajectory?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm still licensed. I did still do stuff for folks around the neighborhood and pro bono stuff, but mostly I try to just use it for the kingdom, right? It's not necessarily my job right now. So I can kind of do it in ways that I just think are most helpful with what time I have. And I think that's the biggest thing, just trying to focus on doing it to help people. It's been a few years since I've got paid to do something legal, but that's kind of cool because it just freed me up to do it for those who need it the most.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So I guess we've talked about it a lot. I mean, this whole podcast has sort of been there, but how do you see the kingdom of God sort of coming into like what you're doing? Maybe again, you can just say, hey, we've already talked about all that, but like, what does the kingdom of God mean in like sort of where you are right now?
I mean, it means a lot. And really, you know, that's the end goal of what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that we're Christ-centered and focused on kind of kingdom politics. You know, I often ask people, can people see God's will through your politics, or do they just see your self-interest? And that's what we're trying to get at, to say, Christian, your number one issues can't all be about what you're afraid of and how you can protect yourself. How are you helping other people? Because I would have to imagine that when we all, you know, on that day when we see our Maker, He's not going to commend us for how well we protected ourselves. He's going to commend us for how well we've loved our neighbor. And that's what we're trying to get people to see, that these are life or death issues that we deal with in politics. And so we understand that, but guess what? There's still something bigger than that. And if we can get people to say, you know what, there's something bigger to what I'm doing, that I have to step back, not care about the issues in politics, care about them, but with a different perspective, then you'll even be more impactful and effective, and you won't be kind of feeding in or perpetuating some of this negativity.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I love that. So can we jump into the topic of race? Are you cool with that?
Sure.
I don't know how we sit in this moment right now and not sort of like broach the topic, right? Because is the AND campaign, I mean, is that part of the mission and desire of the organization?
Absolutely. I mean, we believe the church has a racial divide. I think that's clear to most people who are paying attention. And that racial divide is kind of coupled with a political divide. And so we approach politics and race, you know, in unison a lot of times, because those two things kind of go together. And since we can't talk about politics a lot of times without, you know, it becoming destructive, then we can't talk about race without being destructive. And so we're trying to get past that. Again, number one, by emphasizing the common ground, but also saying you cannot ignore the historical context.
Right.
And too often what we try to say is, hey, just proclaim the gospel. Everything will be okay. Everything, you know, everything will be okay, but God has given us a little more than that. You know, right. if you, one of your kids, you know, falls down and cuts their knee and is, you know, bleeding profusely, you're not just going to say, hey, I'm just going to proclaim the gospel and that's it. No, you're going to do something about it, right? Because God put them within your sphere of influence to protect and, you know, and to make sure you can take care of certain things. It's not much different than that. And so what we're saying is, if you look at it from historical context, majority Christians have had a lot of power. In many instances, they've misused that power. Now is the time to use social and political capital to help those folks you should have been helping a long time ago. If we can't have an honest conversation about that, that's unfortunate. But one of the things that happens when we go into race conversations, just like when we go into other political conversations, we go in with this posture of self-defense. And so everybody's trying to defend themselves to make sure that they leave out again of the conversation faultless. And that's just not the way Christians should enter conversations. None of us are faultless. So we need to enter in with kind of self-examination and saying, okay, where can I do better? And am I being prideful? And that goes for both sides. I mean, I know people who say, man, I'm so sick of this. I'm not going to speak to anybody but my community. Well, why? Because they might not agree with you? Because, you know what I'm saying? Is it piquing your pride or something like that? And so that's what we have to get rid of. We got to be able to have real conversations and say, you know what? I was wrong, and err on the side of compassion, right? Even if you don't see something, if you see your brothers and sisters continually telling you something is wrong, even if you don't see it, if you, you know, if you love them, then you need to hear them and pray that maybe your eyes will be open to what's going on. Yeah, and that's, to us, is where it's important. But again, I don't talk a whole lot about racial reconciliation anymore, and unless we're talking about policy changes or resources. You'll very quickly find a lot of the reconciliation conversations are really just about fellowship, which is good, and kind of a kumbaya moment, but it's not enough. Not when you look at the history of America and race. And so you'll find that a lot of African Americans and others quickly lose interest in those conversations because, like, man, I'm trying to keep my church doors open. I'm trying to feed the, you know, the kids down the street. I don't have time to just, you know what I'm saying, to just be going back and forth, and you're not really listening or willing to lend resources or change policies to change the situation. I've got to deal with some very, very serious issues. So that's not to downplay fellowship. I think fellowship is very important, but there's more that we can do. I mean, you know, what is it? 1 John 3 says, you know, when you see somebody in need and you just give them words when they need something to wear or they need food, that's not faithful. That's not Christ-like.
Man, I appreciate that. I think that's a really helpful way to talk about this and think about it. Even for me, I'm like, how do I take this in? Okay. I mean, I totally get that and I appreciate that. What are the sort of policies then that you're talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to go about it. I mean, one of the things that's obviously a hot topic right now is police reform and criminal justice. Right. How can we impact some of these things? So I think, you know, on a federal level, now most of this is going to be done on a state or local level. But on a federal level, I think like things like incentivizing better training, outlawing, you know, chokeholds or whatever to the extent that you can. Those things go a long way. But just making sure the folks are trained better and that there are different incentives. Now, I'm not against also looking at budgets to see, hey, are there situations where we could send a social worker in rather than sending police in, which could escalate the situation? Now, I may not agree that that happens as often as some others, or that, you know, I'm not a defund the police guy, although I see that, you know, I kind of see what some folks are saying. But there are opportunities when you look at budgets to spread that around and do it in a better way.
No, I totally agree.
So there's a whole lot of things that we could be doing, especially when it comes to the other thing that I'll name on a local and state level is prosecutorial discretion. You know, we don't realize how much discretion that prosecutors have. But if I come to you and I'm like, hey, man, I know you got charged, whether you did or not, you can either fight this and you'll likely get 50 years, or I'll just give you 10 or 5. And that's a lot of time, but I don't want to do 50. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't have a good attorney, or I don't feel like I have a good attorney, right? And so I'm like, do I really have a choice? And so that's one of the big things at the AND campaign. So we're creating what we're calling the Prayer and Action Justice Initiative with other organizations, faith organizations around the nation, to say it's time for Christians to step up and start leading this conversation. Christians from both sides of the aisle, because we have something in common and we need to make sure we're fighting for those who are marginalized.
Yeah, that's awesome. I appreciate that. I've heard Anthony Bradley talk about something, you know, similar with the prosecutorial misconduct and all that stuff, and how much leeway they had. Yeah. And it's not always misconduct either.
Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's just the culture just gets, you know, goes wrong.
Well, it's a lot of power to give to one person, right? I mean, any bias you have whatsoever is going to get just amplified with that much power.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, our whole system's set up to be checks and balances, and it feels like there's not, maybe not enough of those in that one sort of place. Yeah.
So that's good. A lot of work to do.
Yeah. There's always a lot of work to do, man. Yeah. So do you feel like we sort of covered the book and the AND campaign and sort of hit high points? And
yeah, whatnot? I think we hit the high points. Again, I think with the book, Compassion and Conviction, which is the AND campaign's really our framework for more faithful Christian engagement. The big thing is there is Christian, I mean, it gives you a different framework for politics. It's the paradigm shift for how Christians look at politics. So whether you are somebody who's avoided it or somebody who's been in it and you're like, I'm not doing this right, something's wrong, this book is just going to help you. If you think that it's going to become an issue in your church in 2020, then this is the perfect time to kind of get that book in there and have people thinking Christianly, as we say, when it comes to politics. As far as the AND campaign goes, you know, we're about education. We're trying to raise civic literacy among Christians, help Christians apply their values to the issues of the day. We're trying to bring about conciliation when it comes to race, when it comes to politics, by focusing on our common ground and focusing on the gospel. And then we're trying to give Christians on ramps to advocate, right? We're trying to give them an institution that says you don't have to be here every day or be paying attention every day, but if you support this, this will move us further to what we think Christians should be doing in the public square.
That's awesome. I love that. I do. So is one of the main issues that's going, or is it an issue that most people only sort of think about politics on a federal level and neglect politics on a local and state level? I mean, it feels like most political discourse is like you're either pro-Trump, anti-Trump right now, right? Let's be honest. But is it that we're so focused on that one thing that we've neglected a lot of like change that could happen at a smaller level?
Oh, without a doubt. I think because we only focus on national politics, we miss all the opportunities on a local level. And the truth of the matter is what's going on a local level is going to have more of a direct impact on you anyway. The other good thing about what happens in local politics is that you can get small wins, right? You know, people get frustrated with national politics. It's like, man, my vote is one out of millions and millions and millions. Right. Well, on a local level, that's not really true. If you're really focused in on what you're doing, you go to the school boards, you go to the county commission or the city council, whatever you have in, you know, your area, you can really make some change. You know, get to know your representatives, get to know, you know, your sheriff, your DA, and you can make a difference. But again, too many people focus on the national, especially when you're talking about criminal law. That's not even where most of the change is supposed to occur. Even if you're talking about mass incarceration, that's mostly a state issue. But people don't know that because, you know, it's a long story, but people don't know that, but they need to know it. And I think we try to make that clear.
Yeah, even a lot of the statistics we throw out are federal penitentiaries, which is like a just a small amount of the people who are institutionalized across the country at the state level. So,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It skews what we're talking about, too. So, good. All right, Justin, this has been great. Do you mind if we jump into the final two questions?
Let's do it.
All right, man. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
The strangest job. I don't know that I've had a whole lot of strange jobs. I've done landscaping, worked at shoe stores. I don't know that I've had a strange job. I guess now my job is a little bit strange to some, you know, doing politics, you know, unless people know what the AND campaign is or, you know, have heard about it, it's even hard. I don't even like explaining it because people just don't get it. And so, yeah, I think now, man, when you're talking about faith and politics and how those interact, sadly to people, that's like a weird combination. So hopefully it won't be so in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Amen. I'm on board with all that, dude, for sure. Okay, so my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
More into their work. That's good. One piece of advice. I mean, obviously, you know, you have to be in the Word to do that. And I would say just find somebody who you would least likely maybe have a conversation with, or you might least likely work with, and build a friendship, right? Show them the love of Jesus Christ. And I think when you do that with people who really can't do anything for you, then that's really, you know, how we can be like Christ. So I think whether it's on your job or whatever you do, if you can become friends or just build a relationship with somebody who you're not asking anything of them, they don't have anything to give you, that is one way within your work and what you do, your vocation, to really have an impact.
I love that, man. I think that's great advice and something, it's very, very just important stuff. So thanks so much for making time for me, Justin. I know you got a lot going on with the book release and all that stuff, but it's nice to meet you. And thanks for the education.
Thanks for having me, Curry. I appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Justin in this episode. I'm also assuming that you paused this episode halfway through and went ahead and bought the book because it's that good. If not, this is a great time to go purchase said book. I checked out Justin's Church Politics podcast. That's a great one to check out. That's in the show notes. Just go check out the AND campaign and what they got going on. It's important stuff. We need to be engaging as Christians in these things. And I honestly don't always know how to do that. And so I appreciate that there's people out there willing to sort of guide the way. And like Justin said, there's institutions that can help facilitate thoughtful political engagement. So please go check out all of his stuff. You can go to the bottom of your iTunes app right now and you can leave a rating and review there for the podcast. That just helps get the word out about A Theology of Hustle. And I love to hear that you're enjoying the podcast. That's always very much appreciated to me. So thanks for doing that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.